Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone!
Swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
What's up? Welcome back to Play Tessie's episode 161. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Remember to subscribe, rate 5 stars wherever you're listening. Find us on YouTube on the WEI channel. Got the Play Tessie playlist there. All of our episodes, hit the thumbs up, all that, subscribe. Find us on the socials, at PlayTessie, both Twitter and Instagram. Here with Sammy and Papa, we got a very special guest today, Loomer. Loomer is in the building. Loomer Loney, love that Lou's here with us today because we're still fresh off of the acquisition of a PlayTessie favorite, a guy that we were hyping up all offseason, and a freaking pig, as Lou likes to say, Garrett Crochet. I know all four of us here, super anxious, waiting to know what's next too. Yeah. We're going to get into it all. But Lou, to start off, man, how different, because, oh my God, you could listen to our episodes from the day before the Crochet thing and the day after. How different is your brain chemistry now with Garrett Crochet in the fold compared to like the night before when Fried went goes to the Yankees? Yeah. You hear about the internal strife with Bregman. It was a 180 for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, like I said, when it happened, it was like you felt like you can breathe again and sort of sit back and sort of wait for what's next because it's not that bad, right? You're like, okay, I'll be patient now because you're right. Like, remember, there was words that, like, they weren't really in on Crochet. They weren't, like, a lot of teams were. They weren't. They were in the peripheral of the whole thing, and they lost Fried, and it was like they don't sound like they're in on Burns. It looked like other people. It was just like, well, where's this going? You know, and it was – is the number one guy going to be Walker Buehler? Like if it's Burns and Buehler, okay. If it's Crochet and Buehler, okay. Or, you know, Jack Flaherty, the number one guy. Like, where's this going? And then they announced that trade for Crochet, and you're like, okay. Now I can stomach, right? Now I'm fine with the other guys in addition to this man.
Yeah, and we're, like I said, we just love Garrett Crochet on the show. Yeah. We got to get into what's next. But I want to hear it from you, the man himself. Why is Garrett Crochet a pig? Tell the world why this guy is a freaking pig.
Because he's absolutely filthy, you know, and pigs are filthy. Although people keep coming at me, they're actually very clean.
What is that true? That feels wrong.
It's like a clean. And I'm like, whatever, dude. They play around in mud, whatever. Yes. They cool off, do what you got to do. That's where they live. It's a pig pen. Okay, they're filthy. And that's what he is. Because in the beginning, it was like, so what I tried to focus on was what Craig Breslow has come in here, talked about since day one, and that's swing and miss in the zone. And, you know, not chase rate. Chase rate's great, but swinging, when I throw strikes, swing and miss. And when I started looking at all these starters that were available, like Blake Snell was like 16.2 or 3, rather. Crochet was like 16.2, and the next guy was like 14. So there was obviously like a pig tier, you know what I mean? Like in my mind, you know, for starters. Because those are like reliever type swing and miss stuff. That's like reliever strikeout totals. So right away it was like, I want to get one of these two pigs. Like, I want to get one of these guys that just strike everybody out and get swing and miss. Snell obviously jumps early, probably because of what happened to him last year, but Crochet was the guy. And so yeah, now you got Boss Hog, and now you got to try to put some people with him.
The Boss Hog.
Boss Hog. I love that. All right. So I heard you talk on Section 10. I want to be 100% positive about this. And tell me if I'm wrong. The way I'm seeing it is the pig pen is the rotation and Garrett Crochet is our Boss Hog. Can we go ahead with this?
I was actually thinking more the pig pen should be actually the bullpen should be renamed pig pen. Ooh. And we got to get a couple out there now. That's all, you know, because the starters do go out there and play around a little bit, throw a bullpen. So, you know, I do like Chapman because he's another one. Yes, again, swing and miss. The two guys they've added are ridiculous swing and miss in the zone strikeout rates. So it's like, give me one more of those guys. You know,
could be the War Pigs in the rotation. So you got you got Boss Hog with the War Pigs.
Yeah,
and then the pig pen is the bullpen.
That's where I think we're leaning. Basically, there's a lot of pork. You know what I mean? Yeah. Kind of floating around right about now. So, but one more swing and miss guy. This is what they need. And again, I just sort of follow like what they say. You know, we need more swing and miss. Like Chapman's not a surprise. You know, Tanner Scott would be outstanding. You know, Jeff Hoffman would be fantastic. Kirby Yates is another one. Like there's a lot of guys that have a ton of swing and miss. So get one more out there.
So we'll jump into who they're going to add to the rotation in the bullpen. But before that, I want to stick on Crochet a little bit. Last year, 32 starts, 146 innings, 209 strikeouts, big number. What's your expectation for Crochet in 2025, Lou? Is this guy going to be an ace right away, or should we temper expectations?
You know, I just think he's ready to break out. You know, I expect him to, you know, aces gets thrown around too much. He'll be the number one. You know, an ace is a proven 200-inning guy that you could just back to the baseball card. He's not there yet, okay? But the ceiling is. There's no question about it. Now, there's a lot of boxes he needs to check off. Like, I'm not naive to think this didn't come with risk. You know, I saw Keith Law, and he mentioned his health, like 17 times in an article talking about how he could be great, but he's got to be healthy. Well, you're Tommy John. I mean, who hasn't had Tommy John at this point? Last year was his healthy year. It was his foundation year. He gave him 145 innings. So to me, it's like, you know, I love the fact that he said, I don't expect to have a leash, no collar, whatever. Like, that's 185, you know, 190, and kind of go from there. He'll keep take care of him midsummer, that type of thing, whatever. But Cora always does, but I, you know, with the other three guys that have gone 30 starts and this guy, I think you got four guys, you just let him roll.
So with that in mind, right, he had a full 32 starts, like a full season. Innings obviously weren't there, but health-wise, one-year track record, and then just a new market. If you're in the front office, when do you approach him for extension? Do you get him before the breakout? Do you wait a couple of starts? For you, when would you kind of gauge the approach?
Well, I could understand the whole idea of like, let me just see him adjust to here. You know, let me just see him healthy midsummer. We start tying it up. The way the game works right now, that's probably too late. You know?
Agreed.
But then again,
I think you got to go for it.
But then again, you're the Red Sox. So you're only competing against yourself. He's under your contract. Like, to me, it's like, I don't mind waiting because I do think when you look at the guys that John Henry wants to dish money out to, it's exactly like this guy. So if he's shown, maybe you give it some time. If he has shown, even after a first year, he's got 1 year left, we'll pay top of the market. You know, like, so, but a lot of these guys want to go to free agency. So you start working on it right away. You know, I mean, it's risky. There's no question it's risky. What you're risking is more money later on. But if John's kind of comfortable with, you know, signing these guys at a 26 in that window, then he's comfortable giving him what market value would be after a year or 4 or 5 months.
I just get so nervous when you talk about waiting for the Crochet extension, because you see, this is a guy like he's entering the season age 25 at the start. So he'll enter free agency entering his age 27. And we see those guys, like you saw it with Yamamoto. You obviously saw it with Soto.
Yeah.
When guys are young, they get paid. And this is a guy who hasn't necessarily had that full, obviously he's broken out, but he hasn't had a 200 inning season. He hasn't he hasn't done it yet. But when he does, if he does it this year, now it's, I just got to do it one more time, and then they're paying me Yamamoto money. So it's a little scary for me to see them wait if that's what they choose to do. If I'm them, you know, you just traded Kyle Teal, you just traded Brayden Montgomery, you're already knee deep in this thing. Just, you've made your bet, make the bet. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, and a lot of it's just the individual. I mean, you've seen it. Everybody, and these guys have different personalities, you know. This is a guy that's missed 2 years early on in his career with Tommy John. Right. So there is a little risk. He himself can have all the confidence in the world, and he sounds like he does have it, and he should have it. But at the same point, he himself has not had that year yet, that full year yet. So maybe you play a little bit on that. You know, maybe this is a kid that's just sort of, you know, like yeah, that contract is great. I might be leaving $100 million on the table in 3 more years, but you know, who am I? You know, that's amazing money. It sets my whole family up forever. He also might be a guy that's like, no, like I am a pig. You know what I mean? I am that guy, and I'll wait for 2 years, and I'll give you an opportunity to sign me back when I hit free agency. We don't know.
It's true.
Like, the personality. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, I think so many of us assume just because of what happened at the trade deadline last year with him demanding that extension that like he would be down for it. And obviously, Sean McAdams report with people who know him seem to think he might, but obviously we don't know. Like a lot of that could be based off of where his head was at in the middle of last season. And now that he's done it and he made it through a full season, made 32 starts, like that could change. So obviously we'll find out. I hope to
I think
God.
That was blown up. I think that people blew that up too much because I think that was your self-preservation. I think that was taking care of his own business. You know, this was a guy that at 100 innings at the beginning of July, the team was like, you know, you threw 12 and two-thirds the last 2 years, so we can shut you down. And I don't know what the conversation was. They chose to continue to start him, but he went 3-4 innings, 55 pitches a start. So it's if the Dodgers trade for me and they play into mid-October into November – and you actually plan on like pitching me and I'll end up with 200 innings, I'm going to go back under the knife again. Like I can't do that. And if that happens, I'm a 28-year-old free agent with, you know, one half season. So it's like, to me, that was like him and his agent just sitting there saying, I can't do what you want me to do if you trade for me. So if you're going to trade for me, give me an extension. Like I want some security for my career. I've already been through a lot. So I just, that's the way I looked at it. The minute I heard that thing in July, this kid's just trying to take care of his own business. He plays for the White Sox. You know what
I mean? And you know what? It was fair, Lou. Hey. It was fair because, as you said, this is a guy. I mean, he'd never started in the majors. He hadn't thrown a lot of innings, even as a reliever. Like, totally understandable.
What's the alternative? The alternative for him? Get hurt?
Throw 220 innings after not like what?
Get hurt with no guaranteed money.
Innings after I've thrown 12 and two-thirds the last 2 years, coming off Tommy John. I'm pretty sure I'm going to hurt myself again. And then what? Then where does my career go? Now he's looking for a huge payday. Like if somebody traded for him and gave him 200, he would got hurt again. And where does he go then? So that to me, that was just about his business.
Yeah, I never understood why people tried to – there were a lot of people trying to villainize him for that. And it's like, by God, what do you expect from the guy? But
Also, every once in a while, people pop up and try to pay attention to baseball around here.
Yeah. It's true. I want to move forward to what could potentially be next. And there's one big gun still sitting on the market in Corbin Burnes. And obviously he's sitting on the market for a reason. We heard Ken Rosenthal in the middle of last week say he was definitely going to sign by the end of the week. And it hasn't happened yet. And then obviously for me, I'm just a little bit confused here because you hear all the reports about John Henry being really hesitant to pay long-term deals and big money for starting pitchers in their 30s, yet you also saw him offer 7 years, $190 million for Max Fried. So on the surface, I think, all right, you've taken a big plunge for Crochet. Why not take another step further and lock in Burnes and get those two at the top of the rotation? At the same time, my heart lies with Vlad Jr., and I'm afraid that he won't pay both. So
hey, that's my follow-up question. Hold on.
Well, let's stick with Burnes. Let's stick with Burnes here. Would you extend further for Burnes, or do you take it a step down from that to add to Crochet?
Well, you're assuming that he's asking for that like area that Fried got. You're willing to go 790, but he may not be willing to go 10-270, you know, 10-300, which is what Scott may be asking, and I don't know what he's asking. But I think what we do know is that nobody has matched his price. And if there is somebody that has, it's a team that he doesn't want to go to. So, you know, maybe you look at it and say, well, Scott's just asking for too much and he's not going to get that. And obviously he hasn't, or he would have signed by now. Maybe you get back involved again. You know, because as you mentioned, you want to go 7-190. Why not just go a little further? Well, we have no idea how much further they want to go. You know what I mean? 10-300 is a big jump from 7-190. So I just don't know why he hasn't signed yet. He was the guy that was supposed to set the market. And obviously now teams are balking at that price. So we'll see if that thing comes down. We'll see if the Red Sox get involved. I don't know. Maybe you go 6 years, blow him away. 7 years, raise that AAV. I don't know. But I do know you put Corbin Burnes with Zach, you know, with Crochet on top with the three you got, I mean, you can match with anybody.
Lou, does Garrett Crochet being in the fold affect the negotiations with a guy like Corbin Burnes in a way that the Red Sox, they no longer look like that team that's desperate for pitching? They got a guy now. They could, you know, conceivably walk away and then come back and see what Corbin Burnes' side does. Does it affect anything at all in the negotiations to have Crochet aboard?
I guess less desperate, you know, and maybe there was a little bit of desperate in the negotiating for Crochet, right? Like maybe it was, if you believe the story, you know, whether it's Meidroff and Wilkman in there, you can either have Montgomery or you can have Teal. And finally, I think you got to the point where, like, you can have both. Maybe that was the text in the morning to Getz. You can have both. Let's get this deal done. So maybe there was a little bit of desperation, which is why the White Sox waited. Everybody wanted, oh, just go get Crochet now. It's like, no, they waited and they got what they wanted. Maybe a little more less desperate, I should say. Maybe now with Crochet, you could say, well, now with Crochet, we're okay with Crochet Buehler or, you know, Crochet Flaherty might be the big, who knows? But hopefully you get back involved in it, because I still would love to see Corbin Burnes on top of this rotation or right there with Crochet.
Mm-hmm. I think we'd all love to see Corbin Burnes pitching for the Red Sox. Yeah. But the caveat to that, I got to ask, if the Red Sox do sign Corbin Burnes somewhere in that wide 200 to 300 million range, does that affect the odds of them getting Vlad Guerrero Jr., whether it's via a trade at the deadline, a trade in the offseason, or just waiting until he's a free agent after this season?
I would hope not. You know, I mean, that's a guy that's right in that range again of somebody that John, I think, would be interested in, because it's all about prime. It's all about reducing risk, and position players at 26, 27, there's not much risk there, you know? So whether you go get a guy like Burnes and put this thing together, and whether you're over the luxury tax this year or just under, I don't know where you would be. I think that's the type of guy you go over for, you know, a guy like Vlad. Now, you know, does he fit? There's obviously a lot of pieces that have to be moved around. I mean, you make a guy like that fit, but I think everybody's going to be interested in him.
So I gotta ask you on the subject of Vlad, because we're a big white whale podcast, and yeah. Vlad is my white whale. Yeah. Sammy's was Crochet. Lucky him. You don't get to get your white whales on the team often. He got Crochet, so now he's on to Mason Miller, and Pat's got Tatis. Who is the loomer white whale? Do you have one?
Tatis is close. Yeah. I love Crochet, too. Right now, it's going to be Vlad. I mean, it is. I mean, you know, we're kind of – I don't think Tatis is going. Even, like, when they talk about trading their stars, he's not one that they mention. But Vlad is definitely, I would think, the guy, you know, right now. I mean – the Red Sox, yes, they've had some amazing left-handed hitters here, right? We all know the history of it, but it's – how do you not have that thumper, you know, with the right side? They've tried it with Duvall. They've tried it with Renfro. They brought in O'Neill, all these guys, one-year wonders. And they've all pretty much performed. They've all, you know, happily done their job like you would have hoped. But having a guy like Vlad just sitting behind Devers and you know, whether Casas is still here, I don't know what the hell's going on with that, but – if he is, that'd be amazing having those three guys.
Lou, let's say they don't sign Burnes. What sequence of moves do you see and you go, okay, crushed it, A-plus offseason, in a world where they do not get Corbin Burnes?
Well, I still wouldn't rule out, like, another trade, you know. And you know, obviously, I think Jared Jones is the guy, right? Like, to me, that's the guy. Everyone's like, you know, stop trading away your farm system, just spend money. And there is part of that I agree with. Okay, I understand that. But if you are going to add a right-handed bat, you have to make a trade off this roster. You just do. You have a lineup already. So how do you improve it when your outfield is already like Abreu, Duran, or Rafael, and your infield is already Devers and Story and Casas, and second base should be Campbell and Grissom, I would think, with other options, and Wong catching. So it's like, So if you have to include some big leaguers and some minor leaguers to get a guy like Jared Jones and then spend money on bullpen and bats, to me, that's a home run, right? So for some reason, people, I think, would be upset at that because they still haven't spent money. If you get a guy in the second year in Jones, it seems like they just want him to spend instead of building a great staff. But Jared Jones would be a guy.
Yeah, I posted today on Twitter just to see what people would say, knowing that, you know, Marcelo Meyer is not going to be enough to get Jared Jones. Wanted to gauge the population, but most people were kind of, you know, on board with a package, you know, headlined by Meyer to get Jared Jones, whether that means adding more prospects or major league talent. I want to see what you think. What do you think the cost generally is going to be for a guy like Jared Jones?
Through the roof. And it's really about control. Everything is about control. Everything. Especially for one guy that for his rookie year showed the upside that he has, got 5 years of control left. You know, we saw what 2 years of control got the White Sox, you know. So, you know, your third, fourth and fifth best prospect and a couple of intriguing guys. I think Mydroth is going to be a big leaguer. You know, I don't know the impact, but I think he's a big leaguer. So if you're asking for 5 years of control, and that's why I think I was even talking about it. I'm like, to me, it's Meyer, Abreu, plus, plus, plus. They got to ask for Casas in there as well. Like, it's that big of an asking price. And it's, like, you know, I get it. You're not getting the guys, you're not getting Skeens, but it's the most valuable thing in the world is controllable young arms. And you're asking for 5 years of it. So it's the asking price is going to make people extremely uncomfortable if they're really upset about giving up Teal and Montgomery.
All right, I got to ask, Gordo's going to hate this. Don't be mad at me, Gordo. But Lou, would you, in a situation, comes up, the Pirates were like, look, we like Abreu, we like Meyer. We'll get the deal done if you swap Meyer for Casas. Are you doing that deal?
I would definitely think about it. You know, I would.
Lou.
I would, yeah.
No.
And it's like, and it's funny because everybody always like pins me on like, would you trade Casas? And I'm always like, I think about it. Like, why don't you like Casas? I'm not trying to trade this guy. I would love for him to be in the middle of this lineup for a long, long time. However, what you need is pitching. Like, you need to win with pitching. So, you know, if you know, the worst case scenario, like you just mentioned, if it's like Casas and Abreu, you lose two good, great, controllable bats. But you bring in a five-year controllable Jared Jones. You go out and get your third baseman and Arenado, whoever it may be, Bregman. You improve your defense. And Devers plays first, no problem. You know, and you bring in Teoscar. Like, you are freaking loaded. Like, you are absolutely loaded. So it's a stiff asking price. But I think that you would, to be honest with you, I think it's Abreu Casas plus.
I think so, too.
That ain't going to get it done. Like, that's, I'm just saying, that's a 5-year value for a guy like that. He's just not going to get it done.
Yeah. That's, Abreu, Casas, and then like
maybe
a,
Meyer.
Replace maybe the Meyer. Depth. At that point, if it's all three, I got to walk away at that point. That's just too much. But like, Abreu, Casas, and you give them like, maybe even Cutter. I might even give them Cutter for a kid like this. It's just so hard to find 22-year-old kid with five pitches, throws 102 strikeout machine. Ah. Come on. Well,
that's the thing. And that's why, they don't have to get rid of Tristan Casas. This is not where this is headed. Like, they don't. Like, the smart play is to obviously keep the guy, right? And let him go out there and hopefully he's healthy and pops 35 bombs. And then you might sit there and say, well, we don't want to get rid of him. Or we can get anybody we want for just him if you wanted to move on from him, whatever. I mean, that's the smart play. The problem is that you need to improve your pitching staff. And if you are trying to get a guy, you know, that's got a year or two, you know, left of pitching, you're obviously not going to give him up. And you're going to try to, you know, move Abreu, who, by the way, you don't want to give up either. But this is the cost of improving your pitching staff. But if you are starting to dive into a guy that's got 3 years, four years, 5 years of control, you're not going to get it done with minor leaguers. Like, you don't, you know what I mean? Because if you don't want to give up Roman Anthony, you know, you're not going to get it done with just minor leaguers. Like, the asking price is through the roof.
Yeah. And I think the reason for it is just because why would they trade him? Say 5 years of control. This guy is, he's ready to headline a rotation for those 5 years. And if I'm the Pirates, I'm not trading him unless I'm flat out blown the fuck away with an offer. And yeah, to me, it's going to need to include at least two of those three guys you talked about and more. And for me, the reason I'm so against Casas, you kind of alluded to it, Will, or Lou, it's you trade this guy while he's, I don't want to say at his lowest value, because obviously if he gets hurt again, then his value is going to plummet. He's going to have that label as the injury prone guy. But you don't want to trade him now. You want to trade him potentially in a year coming off of what I think is going to be a monster season, or you keep him. The only reason I would say trade him in a year is if you have to do it to get Vlad in the door. But I'm just a little bit nervous that if you trade Casas and Abreu, or even just Casas, this is an offense that already at times last year was very streaky, very up and down. You've already lost Tyler O'Neill. if you bring in a Teoscar or a Santander on a per game basis, like it's kind of a lateral move. Obviously, they'll both be on the field more.
I agree. You know, obviously, the biggest thing for him is games played, because if he plays 150 to 155, you know what his numbers are going to be. The reason why, to me, like this thing is talked about a lot, isn't because we're talking about it. It's because, you know, back in September when Ken Rosenthal came out with a story about trading Tristan Casas and moving Devers to first and being interested in Adamas Bregman or a trade for Arenado, like, did he roll out of bed and just think of that and print it? Like, I'm not sure he did. And then, you know, then you start hearing stories that maybe he was initially involved in the Crochet deal, but they didn't want him because they're not ready to build. Now you're hearing stories that maybe he's being dealt or talked about out in Seattle. And it's like,
yep,
asking the wrong questions. Like, you're asking, like, you know, as far as like, I wouldn't deal him. The question really is, why are they dangling him? You know what I mean? Like, why? So yeah, it's like, you know,
that's, I agree with you.
You know what? Do you have a guess? A guess why?
Because the game's played, in my opinion, like games played, like he's missed a lot. And they might look at it as like, if we don't think he can stay healthy and give us 150 games, then we should move on, because another 100 games is 3 years in a row of games played. It's a couple years in the minor leagues of games played. That's the question. Why is he out there? Why is he talked about?
I just get so scared that this team could trade him. He's got 4 years of control left. And this is a guy who has, especially in Fenway Park, but the potential to be a 40 homer guy. And if he's doing that elsewhere because you traded him for, and you traded him as like part two of a giant package, that would just wouldn't.
But I would say this, Gordon, I would say this: if whoever, because that's just the way I always feel about anybody, whoever they trade anyone for, if the guy that you bring back is who you think he is, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? In other words, like, you don't want to give him up to, say, Jared Jones. And Jared Jones for the next 5 years is like a Cy Young candidate all-star. You're not going to give a shit who you gave up for him, because he's helping you win at the big league level. That's just the way I've always felt about it. And then, now, they haven't really got burned. You know, like, that's the whole thing with, like, Mookie. You got nothing in return. That's the biggest problem. You know, like, they never really got burned. Like Dombrowski never got burned on a big trade, so it was no big deal. But even if Moncada and Kopech ended up being all-stars.
You'd have taken it.
It didn't matter.
Another thing, too, that kind of plays into the Casas stuff is there are so many rumors from every end of the earth about Rafi going to first base, Rafi not going to first base, Bregman playing second, Arenado playing first. Like, it's just, where are you on the third base situation? Do you want them to move Rafi to more of a first base or DH? Do you want Bregman at second? Where do you stand on kind of that infield DH shuffling right now?
Well, that's another one that kind of, you know, brings you to Casas. It's almost like they're preparing themselves if they have to move him, because, you know, I don't think you're bringing any of those guys if he's still on the team. You know, because I there's no way in hell you're signing Nolan Arenado, whose value is a Gold Glove defender, one of the best third basemen in the game, and moving him to first. And by the way, if you're moving him to first, where's Tristan? Like, I don't believe you're trading or signing, you know, Bregman to play second. I'm not buying that. I don't believe that. You're bringing him to play third, you know, and I even talked about it here today, because it's like, there's really no reason for the Boston Red Sox to talk about publicly, you know, including Tristan Casas or moving Devers from third to first, until there's a move that makes that happen. Then you have that conversation, because, you know, you're going to go to Devers, who's a leader on your team, and say, hey, by the way, you know, if I just want to let you know, you know, that if the balls fall in a certain area here, you know, like if this 4, 5, 6 things happen, we may make a trade and we may move you to first base and improve our defense at third. Like, why would you tell him that before a move was made? Then you could have that discussion. Why would you tell Tristan Casas we're dangling all over the place for every pitcher in the world? Because when all these deals fall through, and you sit there, it's not a bad place to be, right? Devers at third, Casas at first. Let's go.
It's the Nomar thing. It's like the Nomar thing from the 04 thing where they he's in the trade and then it gets awkward. It's like, yeah, why would you tell these guys ahead of time?
Yeah. And no matter what they say, you know, publicly, like it's like I said today, like it's professional lying and it's perfectly normal. It's what every team does at every trade deadline, every offseason, possible trade everywhere. Like they're just not going to talk about their own player being traded or moved a position until they have to, because if things fall through, you're in a real weird spot. So just let this thing play out, because there is a scenario where they don't have to do anything and just keep the guys where they are.
Yeah, I think the Nolan Arenado playing first base for the Red Sox, that idea started to make my brain kind of come that out shit. Of my ear and just yeah. like melt that in shit. My head. Well, I do want to ask Lou, and this is perfect for a former big leaguer. There's been a lot of talk, of course, about, you know, is Devers going to stay at third? He's going to move to first. Is he going to DH? And then we saw the reports from his agent saying he has a lot of pride in playing third base. And we know yeah. agents are always going to speak on behalf of their players in a favorable way. Do you, as a former big leaguer, do you think that matters? And or maybe a better question would be, how much does it matter, Devers having, you know, pride, as they put it, in playing third base?
Well, I think it matters. You know, he takes a lot of pride in it. And quite frankly, to be honest with you, I know the metrics are what they are. But last year, I thought Rafi Devers played an average third base, which is, I think, all you'd ever want him to be. I thought he was better last year. You know, we didn't have a three-week span where he made seven errors. You know, he made errors. Every third baseman does. But I thought he was fine at third. It matters more going into free agency, which is, I think it's interesting because I think Vlad was talking about wanting to play third next year in Toronto. And it was like, yeah, because I think third basemen will probably get paid more than first basemen. They have those numbers. But once he's got his contract, you know, it's a pride thing. He comes up as a third baseman. Like, he just views himself as a big league third baseman who continues to work and play the position. He doesn't want to move. But if it makes his team better, we'll see. You have that discussion. By the way, I'm not worried about one bit. I think he'll be a better first baseman defensively than he will be at third. Third baseman's going to first is not a concern. If you're Scott Hatterberg going to first base, you've got problems because you're a catcher. If you're an outfielder going to first base, you've got problems because you're not used to ground balls. But when you're a corner infielder and you go from third to first, the transition is easy. It happens in spring training. I mean, Kevin Youkilis did it, and he won a gold glove over there. If as long as he's into it, I think he handles it without a problem.
Do you? I heard you say, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that Devers, you know, his issues are more, it's more the range, not the hands. Do you think he could be a plus first baseman if he moves over there?
Yeah, I do. You know, because I think the one ball to his left, I think he got better at this year. That's down the line. This guy's been picking baseball since he was, what, 8 years old? You know, and ground balls, he plays one-handed. You know, at third base, he always yeah. has. He can play one-handed at first base. You know, the footwork around the bag, not a problem. He's been catching baseballs in the air since he was 8 years old. He's been picking balls since he's been 8 years old. I mean, it's to me, there is like literally zero concern of this guy moving over. And everyone's like, he's going to be awful at third first. And I don't understand it. Like Jaron Duran,
that's first base.
Yeah, Jaron Duran.
How hard could it be, Sammy?
But I'm just saying, like you give me an outfielder. Like, they're not going to be good at first. Give me a catcher. They struggle a little bit, you know, at first base. But a third baseman moving from one corner spot to the other? What, are you afraid he can't catch a ground ball or catch a ball in the air or pick a ball? He does it. Yeah. That's what he does for a living.
I wouldn't be nervous about if Devers could take to the position and play it well. I actually think he'd be pretty good at it. The only reason I'm so against the Devers first base thing is it just goes right back in the circle, right back to the Casas thing.
Yeah,
because that guy's not going to be like, if one of those two is going to DH, it should be Rafi. I get nervous about the whole. Right, so
they're not going to DH.
So if he's going over to first, it's Casas getting traded.
That's it. They're not DHing.
So that's where my fear comes into play, and I don't know if there's some sort of maybe like rotation. Like, if they let's just use Nolan Arenado as the example. Let's say they trade for him and they don't trade Casas and they don't, and obviously Devers is still here. If there's some sort of rotation to be had where all three of them get DH time, I really don't know. But is there a way to have an Arenado or a Bregman here to play third base that doesn't involve trading Tristan Casas?
I don't think so. Like, I think there's a, you know, the reason why you're holding off right now is to find out what you're doing. Like, you know, to me, if they have no interest in Bregman and Arenado, then Casas isn't going anywhere. You know, if they can pull off a trade without involving Casas, you know, and keep Casas at first and not have to trade him, then Bregman's not going to be here, and neither is Arenado. You know, if they have to, with how some chips fall or whatever their plan is, if there's a deal they couldn't pass up and they have to include Tristan Casas, then I can guarantee you're going to have somebody tweeting out about talks are, you know, increasing between Bregman and the trade for Arenado. Like, to me, they're all connected to him.
Yeah, no, it's all connected. And let's stick on Arenado for a second. So let's say you bring Arenado in and Devers goes to first. Tristan Casas is traded. So now you've lost O'Neill and Casas. Arenado obviously he struggled last year offensively. Hopefully, you know, re-energized coming to Boston. Fenway Park, hopefully a better fit for him. Who knows? How can you get this offense better than last year? What is the follow-up move? Because if it's just Arenado in and now Casas and O'Neill are both out, like, sorry, that's just going to be a worse offensive team.
Yeah. How much did Casas play last year?
What, 55 or so games?
Yes. Yeah. He didn't have him last year anyway. You know what I mean? Like,
but even at the end, with him and Story in the lineup, some of their worst offensive baseball of the year. And I know those guys were coming off huge long absences, but it did feel like some of their worst and most inconsistent offensive baseball of the year came when those guys were both in the lineup at the end.
Yeah, no, you're going to need – well, yeah, because it was – both guys were coming back. That's why at the end of the year when their offense really struggles, because Raffy didn't have a shoulder to swing with. And O'Neill was kind of in and out. He was banged up and hurt. You had to play Casas because you were hoping he just got hot.
Durant struggled too.
And Story was kind of coming back, and you just play defense. So you had these four guys that you needed in the lineup, but you knew they were all struggling. And it kind of hurt you. And it kind of got Yoshida out of the lineup, because everybody was healthy and he was actually starting to swing it. So it was just a weird spot last year. But if that scenario were to play out, as you mentioned, Arenado's here, Devers is the first, no Casas. To me, you're acquiring another bat. There's still a free agent bat in there, whether it's a Teoscar Hernandez or whatever. So now all of a sudden you're looking at Teoscar and Arenado and Casas and whatever. But, you know, the funny thing to me is all we ever talk about is offense. Like, that's all we ever talk about. And if you subtract, you know, a little bit of offensive threat and make yourself a better defensive team, especially with guys like Story and Arenado or Bregman at third base, like, you win more games. Like, you just do. Like, we saw it. We've seen it the last 2 years. So as much as we focus on offense, we cannot stop thinking about the things that kept us up awake at night last year.
Oh, man, shortstop defense early in the year was the bane of my existence for 2 months, basically.
Oh, 2 years worth.
Yeah, I was going to say, going dating back.
The 2023 Kike at shortstop. I never want to think about that as I bring it up. But, Lou, I'm sure we're going to pivot to the right-handed batter, the lefty masher bat that they're going to add in a moment. But before we do, you mentioned Yoshida. Not a bad player. I think we all agree he can hit. But the more time that passes, the more it feels like he doesn't really have a spot. What do you think happens with Yoshida in 2025?
Again, I think you have to see where everything kind of goes with this. You know, there is a path, like we just keep mentioning. A guy's like, let's say you make some monster deal or something like that, and Casas and Abreu aren't here. You know, now all you have is Devers and Duran from the left side. Mm-hmm. You know, now all of a sudden, you're not susceptible to just lefties, to where there's, what, 40% of the league or 30% of the league is lefties. You're susceptible to 70% of the league, and they're all righties. So I think there is a spot where the way things play out, to where Yoshida is still needed. You are a team that strikes out way too much. He's the best contact hitter you have. And you'll be just sitting there saying, you know what, the reality is our designated hitter is a guy that we're going to ask to hit 285, you know, with a 340 on base and going to hit 15 home runs and just make contact and give us good at-bats. Like, so there is a role for this guy. You know, I get it. We'd like for him to hit 30 homers, but that's just not who he is. If you end up keeping all your lefties and you don't have to make a trade and you go free agency and sign everybody, then yeah, there's a good chance you could probably move him and eat a bunch of money and attach a prospect to him and be gone with it, right? But you got to figure out where this thing goes. This can still go a whole bunch of different ways.
Yeah.
If you made a trade for Crochet and you didn't subtract anybody from the big league team. Mm-hmm. So we still don't know where this thing could head.
Like, Yoshida, probably end of the offseason is the decision for a guy like him, because he's like, his role is contingent on whatever other moves happen before, is what you're saying, right?
Yeah. It could even be like something like in February. You know what I mean? Like, we don't know how far this thing goes, but that last piece that sort of forces you to be like, you know, that DH should be a righty, you know, or we sign a guy like Teoscar, you know what I mean? And there's scenarios where we'd like to DH him and get him off of left field, you know, that type of thing at times. So that thing's got to be played out, I think.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about, because we know the lineup that we saw last year. You know the guys on the roster. It's just a bunch of left-handers. And But then you think, oh, you trade Tristan Casas, you trade Willy Abreu. All of a sudden, it's really only a couple of lefties. You have a pretty right-handed lineup, and then you hope Roman Anthony makes his debut pretty early, and then later on in the year, Marcelo comes up, and then now you've injected a couple of lefties in there. That way, it makes a little bit more sense. You got me thinking. I think it was you, Lou, who got me thinking about that early in the offseason because the Yoshida conversations were getting so loud. But it really is true. Like, it's a very left-handed team right now, but one or two moves, you snap your fingers, they bring Teoscar Hernandez in there. Now you don't even have your lefty catcher of the future anymore. So it could get right-handed fast.
Yeah, and everybody was talking about, like, what are you going to do? Because Teal, Meyer, and Anthony are coming up. And it's like, dude, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. Number one, let's see if they do come up. And now Teal is gone, right? So now you're left with Meyer and Anthony. I mean, we think Anthony is definitely going to be coming up here at some point. Is Meyer? I don't know. Like if you don't have to move him, awesome. His job is to go and show he can play 125, 130 games in the minors this year and not get hurt, right? So maybe out of all these, they're all left-handers. You know, talk about Montgomery, who's more of a lefty than he is a righty. Well, two of them are gone. If Meyer happens to get moved, and all of a sudden now you're not this lefty-dominant organization. You know, if you were to trade Montgomery, who I know is a switch, but he's better from the left, and you got Teal and Meyer and Abreu and Casas get moved, you're like, we don't have any lefties, all of a sudden. So this, like I said, there's just a lot of wait and see about what path they take in terms of how they build this team this year.
So historically, I am the biggest anti-closer by committee guy on the face of the planet. That being said, I think there's a genuinely good pathway where you already have Chapman there. You have Slayton, who looks like an emerging back end of the bullpen guy. Whitlock seems like he's going to get some high leverage innings back there. Who do you want them to add to the pig pen? Do you want a guy like Tanner Scott? Do you want that bona fide closer? Or do you want a guy with just filth like a Hoffman or a Yates? Where do you kind of stand on that?
Well, I think all three of them. I would take all three of them. And the reason why I think that, in the past, every time we ever talked about bullpen by closer by committee, that, like, in the past, that's meant we don't have a closer. Like, none of them have ever closed before. But we think we can play the matchup game. And that is what doesn't work. Because the ninth inning is different. It's different. So, but if you have Hendricks, Chapman, and any of those three guys you just mentioned, on any given night, all three of them can close. Because I think they can. And Hoffman, not all that much. Same with Yates. He's done it before. So I just think all of them can close. Like a three-headed monster to go with Slayton, to go with Whitlock, to go with these guys that are out there. So I just need – you need one more. You do. You need – you brought in Chapman, which I like. You just need, like, another Chris Martin. And that's where I think Hoffman comes into play. That's where I think Yates comes into play, like that adult – like those guys, we forget the last 2 years, like how good they were. When you're leading going into the eighth, like Martin was just money. He had some injuries this year. Jansen was, you felt the experience. Like it was got hairy at times, but there wasn't any panic. Remember the days of like Workman closing and you Barnes. Just, oh no, Barnes
yeah,
closing.
Barnes.
And you could just see the panic. Like going into the ninth at Yankee Stadium up a couple runs, you're like, this is not going to go well. And with Kenley, it would be like, ball four, base hit. And you looked at him, you're like, geez, he's going to get out of this, isn't he? And he did. Like,
he couldn't care less.
No, like that experience matters. It just does. So get another arm out there for that big pen.
What do you make of the Jeff Hoffman starting stuff? I'm so torn, like not really torn. Torn's the wrong word. I don't know what to think about it because I haven't seen it since he was just a kid. And obviously it didn't work back then, but he's obviously a way different guy now.
It's sort scary. Of like the like Clay Holmes I wanted, but these guys want to be starters, that takes them out. Like I don't want Jeff Hoffman to be a starter for me, and I don't know, maybe it's these guys that think that, you look at a guy like Lopez down in Atlanta, you look at Seth Lugo, I mean, you look at some of these dudes, Hicks out in San Francisco, that are like, okay, if I'm a great closer, then hopefully I can get 4 years, $60 million. If I am an okay starter, just okay, I can get more than that. And I think it's just, again, a business decision. So I know some of these guys are older that want to try it, but if he wants to be a starter, I have no interest in that. I don't want him in the rotation, just like Clay Holmes, who I was interested in.
So you talk about guys like Holmes, talk about Kenley being a closer. How much do you think roles matter in a major league bullpen? And I'm not just talking about closer. Like we had, I feel Zach Kelly's a good example. Felt like for most of 2024, he was the fireman. He has nasty stuff, strikeout stuff, bases loaded. They like to go to Zach Kelley. Not all the time, but often. Kenley's the closer. Martin was eighth inning. How important is it for these guys to have defined roles in the bullpen?
Yeah, it's very important. And anytime somebody tells you it's not, it's because their bullpen's a complete mess. In my opinion, you know, like roles are important. It's like, well, then that means you don't have any answers out there. Like you're searching, you know what I mean? Those guys down there don't need the phone to ring. They know who's up, you know, ideally, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, you got two lefties. You got one guy that's going to pitch the seventh or the eighth. You got another guy that's going to pitch the sixth. You know what I mean? You got a closer. He has the ninth. You know, like the Red Sox the last few years didn't have to say anything when they're up by a run or two in the eighth. Chris Martin just got up and started to throw. Four pitches in, the phone rings, said, get Martin up. He's like, he already is. You know what I mean? Like they just knew what the roles were. And it's important. Now, they're not always defined the first few weeks in April. But I would say at some point you want to get in that Groundhog Day and everybody, you know, kind of has an idea of when they're going to be used and what the lineup looks like and what the pocket might be or whatever it is. But they're important. You want structure. And that's what like Cora this year kept talking about structure out in that bullpen. He has the last couple of years when he had Martin and Jansen. You know what I mean? When he doesn't have that, you know, publicly he may say it's not that important. But I think deep down, like you heard the last couple of years, it's extremely important.
So I think everyone agrees the Red Sox are probably going to add to the bullpen. But as it stands right now, Slayton, Hendricks, Whitlock, there's a few options for closer. Who are you putting in that role right now if you had to choose?
Well, I guess see how Liam looks first. Hendricks, you know, and if he's back, he's going to get the closer job. You know, he was really good. So it's just a question of will there be a few weeks of kind of getting in that, you know, game type atmosphere and trying to figure that out and work on some things that I stick with him for a little bit. Cora's been known to do that. I think Chapman can handle the role as well. I think Slayton will have a huge role in that bullpen, and that's why if you add one more and with Whitlock, now you've got five high-leverage guys. And I wouldn't sleep on Kelley. You know, I know the idea, maybe you build such a bullpen that, you know, unfortunately, does he start in AAA? Does he start in the big leagues? I don't know. But I said last year, out of every pitcher they had in that team, he had the filthiest stuff than anyone. Starter included.
Yeah.
But it was the experience and of being in those situations, the confidence of it, right? Of executing. And that's where he ran into problems, right? The execution. Like having a guy 1-2 and saying if he just drops this sweeper, you know, down the way, he's out and he throws it over his head or he spikes it 5 feet. Now it's 2-2 and he can't locate. And he just ran into problems, right? So hopefully that experience helps him because his shit's filth. He deserves to be in that pig pen.
He's a pig. Yeah, yeah.
I think the biggest key to this whole thing is I think people genuinely forget how disgusting and filthy Garrett Whitlock, the reliever, is.
Yeah.
He was a legitimate top 10 reliever, and I think it was 21. And then you had the couple of years as a failed starter, the injuries and all that stuff. Plugging him back in there and kind of guaranteeing some better health, that makes the bullpen even deeper than it already. Like, it's genuinely, they might have a lights out bullpen if they do add to it. Whitlock is huge in that bullpen now.
Yeah, and I think the velocity ticks up too, which kind of really makes the changeup a game changer again, you know, and it's really good. It's just that I felt like as a starter, you know, sometimes, you know, this happens. It's like we saw him out of the gate and it was just fastball changeup unhittable, right? And then he started messing with the slider a little bit. And at times I felt like kind of fell in love with it too much, you know, the last year or so there when he towards down the stretch. But as a starter, all of a sudden it became, okay, well, I got my fastball, I got my changeup. I want to bring my little bullet slider into it to go with my sweeper. And sometimes when you just start adding too much, everything else gets diminished. And you know, so you look at him and he's just game for whatever. Like, he's just a great human being. But I do think if you put him back into that bullpen where he is dominant, where he is, you know, confident, could he be a starter? Yeah, 5-6 innings, you know what I mean? Like, could it be a dominant? I think it was worth seeing if he could be like a 1-2 or 3 because his stuff was that good. But if he's not going to be that, then I think he's a dominant multiple inning guy out in that bullpen to help secure more wins with more appearances out of that pen. He can be that good.
Yeah, it's tough because I was such a proponent of the Whitlock starter experiment, but
worth a shot.
Yeah, it was worth a shot. You did see the velocity tick down, which messed with the changeup. They kind of fiddled with it. When we slowed the changeup down, you had some results, but obviously injuries, he just never was really able to get going. But when you get him back in that bullpen, if you add something to this, like I work on this little Excel sheet where I keep trying to project a roster, and the bullpen depth, it really is crazy. If these guys are all healthy, like I look in my minors and I'm like, there's Greg Weiser, Bernardino, yeah. Boozer, Luis Guerrero. It's like these guys are all in the minors. Like if they add one more guy, really, like you do have a chance to have a deep bullpen, and then even the guys like in the bottom of the bullpen and in the minors all have big upside. Like Luis Guerrero, did he let up a run last year? I don't think he did, right?
And you know, crazy. It's funny because I'm on the other side of this now, and when you put a big league team together, you know, and you keep all, you're like, man, what a privilege it is to have some of those guys you just mentioned down in AAA. Like, think about the big league club we have when we've got three arms in a bullpen, we've got three starters down there, you know, in Pawtucket that we've already seen, you know, that's deep. But I was the player that was down there that created a deep organization at times, you know, and it sucks for them. Like Greg Weissert, Brennan Bernardino, Boozer, Winkowski, all these guys you just mentioned, Guerrero, they don't want to be in AAA. Like you know what I mean? They like you want to be with the Red Sox, but they want to have a big league career, you know. And it's like great, you know, it's good for you guys that I'm down here in AAA right now, because when somebody goes down or someone's struggling, you call me up. But I don't want to be here. You know, it's good for the organization, but it ain't good for me. So I feel for those guys, but now, as far as building a ball club goes, kind of the way I look at it, like it's a huge benefit to have it. I just know they don't want to be there. They want to make this team. I feel for them.
So, Lou, one thing I want to touch on, and we've spoken a lot about the rotation, the bullpen, need for a right-handed bat that hits lefties. I feel that one, I don't know if you call it an issue, but one item with the Red Sox that's a little bit flown under the radar is the catcher position. Now, I think Connor Wong is a good baseball player. Is he the catcher long-term? Not sure. The blocking last year, not great. Framing, not great. Both below the 10th percentile. He's strong at controlling the run game. The hitting, decent. What do you think is going to happen at the catcher spot for the Red Sox in 2025 and also long-term with Teal out of the picture?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people in the organization will debate like the metrics and how they're measured, but they are what they are. You know, and you mentioned, like, defensively, there were some issues blocking, framing. They don't put him, you know, I mean, like 63rd out of 64 catchers, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of it is a lot of that stuff. So I think what they'll say, and it's true, like, he is a young catcher, right? He hasn't, it's not like he started catching when he was in high school and college all the way through. So he is still learning. They think that there's a lot of improvement. I think one of the reasons why they went out and got Danny Jansen, even though they were looking for a right-handed bat, they were hoping they'd get some life for a couple of months, knowing that they improved defensively behind the plate when he is in there, especially blocking the baseball. So I think that there's a need for that, like that defensive guy with him. I don't know if they consider this kid Narvaez. Is that how you pronounce his name? From New York?
Yeah.
Narvaez. I know he's a plus. I know the people like him defensively. You know, I don't know if he is Teal depth, you know, if he's AAA catcher depth, and they still are out there looking for another big league catcher or not. But, you know, Teal to me is, you know, was he the catcher of the future? I mean, he was a first round pick, and he was in the minor leagues, and obviously the path would have been, I think he's a big league catcher. The question that I have with is, you know, do we overvalue it because of the position? Like, you don't see many catchers. So it's, if he's not an impact, if he's not Adley Rutschman, if he's not Buster Posey, if he's not like, you know, these great young catchers coming in the game, he's movable, you know, and you just go out and find another defensive guy, you know, to come in here and catch. Because if you do your job, you're putting a lineup together where you don't want offense from your catcher. You don't need it. You know, remember, I think, you know, Alex came from Houston where they kept playing Martin Maldonado over and over and over and over again. You know, they got that kid Yainer Diaz, and they want him at first, you know, because they just value defense behind the plate. I think that's kind of where he's at too. But we'll see where this goes here. They probably still need another catcher.
What do you think? I just have to ask, because these guys always give me grief, because I love Cal Raleigh. I think he's one of the most valuable players in the entire sport. Where do you put someone like that? Like, how do you put him up against the best players in baseball? I just need to feel good about this.
Hold on.
I have.
Where did you, Sammy, where did you put him? You had him top one.
I said top 15. That's a little bit high. I'll say like top 20 player, top 25 in
baseball.
That's high.
Best players? Like
top
overall.
25. I'm so high on Cal Raleigh.
Like, yes.
Lou, tell him he is smoking crack.
No, yeah. He's the best catcher.
Top 15.
Come on, Lou.
He might be the best catcher. There's not
25.
A lot of...
Top 25.
I think that's high.
Ah.
I'm just saying, I think that's high.
Top 50, I'll give you.
Is he a top 5 catcher in the game? Yes. Is he really, really good? Yes. You can put him whatever order you want, whatever. Like I still think Adley Rutschman's really, really good. What do you have, a 709 OPS this year? You know? Yeah. Will he bounce back? I think so. You know, but there's, I think if you're a top 5 catcher in the game, I think you should be happy with that. And I think, yeah, he's the guy hits bombs. He does a great job behind the dish. You know, and that's the thing. Like, if you think you got one of those, I don't think you move them. You know? Yeah. So, and they did.
Love Cal Raleigh. Big.
Apparently.
Big dumper guy. Oh, my God. Look what he's got ready to go. Jeez.
No, it's out of here.
Dude just has a Mariners beanie sitting at all times.
If in case I have to talk about Cal Raleigh, I just bring it out and put it on. Take it off after.
Oh,
what's
my
he
God.
The big thumper? What's it? What's
big dumper.
Name?
The
big
dumper.
I yeah. He's
got
popular.
He's got the big ass.
Big dumper.
Big ass.
Dude, the Mainer Fenway Masher. Oh.
Yeah, he could be the big thumper.
Yeah.
Big thumper God. Dumper.
Lou, man, we appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for jumping on with us. We could talk Sox with you literally all day, but newsflash, Lou has a family, right? So
yeah, a little bit.
Let's let Lou get to his family, but we appreciate it, man. Lou, thanks for jumping on with us. We'll see you at spring training, right?
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on, boys. Always a good
thanks,
time.
Thanks, Lou.
All right. Appreciate it, Lou.